From national news in D.C. to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol, this is your Capitol Connection. And now, bringing the Capitol to you, here's your host, Nate Groz.
And welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in to Capitol Connection, the weekly radio program for Nebraska Family Alliance, right here on 94.5 FM, 1420 AM. The Answer, connecting you with the Capitol and all things related to family, freedom, and life, the issues you care about most. It's been an interesting week. Some new developments and legislative races already heating up here across the state as more candidates declaring for the state legislature. I'm going to talk about that, as well as some new important developments in what will be one of the most significant and important Supreme Court cases in our lifetime that will be heard later this fall, and how you can help support and defend religious freedom and free speech rights and more. But first, here's one for you. Does a senator tweeting Bible verses establish a national religion? Now, before your eyes roll to the back of your head, the answer, according to the folks over at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the answer is yes. A U.S. senator tweeting Bible verses does, in fact, establish a national religion. And this all started when United States Senator Marco Rubio picked up the habit of tweeting Bible verses from his personal Twitter account, and he does so fairly regularly. And when this started happening, some journalists really started, freaking out that a United States senator would tweet Bible verses. Some even suggested that his account had been hacked and noted that they found it very unsettling, and this caught the attention of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, who have written a letter demanding that Senator Rubio either stop tweeting Bible verses or delete his account because, as they say, he is violating the Establishment Clause. And so evidently to the Freedom From Religion Foundation, in their minds, when the founders were writing the U.S. Constitution, when they said, Congress shall make no law respecting establishment of religion, apparently they had a single senator tweeting Bible verses in mind. So apparently they've also missed the part where the Constitution says Congress shall make no law. A single U.S. senator or any Congress member is, in fact, not Congress. They are one member, and also a tweet or referencing or any time they speak about religion or reference a Bible verse, that is not creating a new law. They are merely exercising their First Amendment rights, which of course are found in the next clause in the First Amendment, which guarantees every U.S. citizen the free exercise of religion. But basically, their argument goes like this. This is the logic. Again, this is on Senator Rubio's personal account, but it lists the fact that he is a senator in his little description, and this therefore makes any tweets from his account government speech. The account tweets multiple Bible verses, not just a few, and government officials cannot endorse religion. So that's their train of thought for why Senator Rubio should either stop tweeting Bible verses or delete his account. And, well, there's more than a few problems with that argument that I've already mentioned, but really, the suggestion that any member of Congress or any citizen has the power to make a law establishing a religion by tweeting a Bible verse is simply absurd. You don't forfeit your First Amendment rights when you are in public office. And second, their argument relies on the notion that the American people would somehow believe that Marco Rubio is establishing a national religion when he tweets a Bible verse, which basically assumes that the American people are incredibly ignorant. There is absolutely nothing preventing Senator Rubio or any other member of Congress from tweeting religious statements or talking about religion or Bible verses or other religious texts, no matter their religion. They are not establishing a national religion by doing so. But I just got a kick out of this, and the fact that the Freedom From Religion Foundation is willing to go this far and just has that skewed of an idea of what the First Amendment and Establishment Clause and Free Exercise Clause mean, but hopefully just a little bit of education and understanding of the First Amendment will fix it. Moving from the absurd to the inspiring, Nebraska rescue crews are returning home from Texas, where they are deservedly receiving a hero's welcome. Nebraska crews helped rescue over 1,500 people and 120 animals from Houston. It's just been so incredible and inspiring to see the response from folks in Nebraska who went down to help those who are in such great need in Texas, leaving their homes and families to help those who have been displaced by the hurricane in Texas. They have been working tirelessly around the clock, providing much-needed assistance and relief. So our hats off to all those who served and are still serving those affected in Texas. And of course, now our thoughts and prayers are with those in Florida dealing with Hurricane Irma. And it really just serves as another important reminder of the things that really matter, the most important things in life. You can rebuild homes and things, but you can't rebuild a life that's been lost. So praying everyone stays safe. Here in Nebraska, things are already heating up in the state legislature with a slew of intense and competitive races for seats in the state legislature already taking shape. And I won't offer any predictions, since after the 2016 election, I don't know how much anyone's predictions are worth anymore, since anything can happen. But I do have several observations, and notably, the first being that Democrats are coming to the table with some big-name candidates that will pose a serious challenge and make for some very competitive races. They have three candidates with big-name recognition already declared for the state legislature and another for the U.S. Senate. First being Chuck Hasselbrook, who ran and lost the race for governor last time around to Governor Ricketts in what ended up being not a very close race. Governor Ricketts won with a heavy majority, but Chuck Hasselbrook has now declared to run for the legislature in District 16, and that seat is currently held by Senator Brosh, who is being term limited out of office. And Senator Brosh has been truly a strong conservative, so that would be a major flip if that seat went to Chuck Hasselbrook, the Democrat. There is a conservative and pro-life candidate from Arlington, Michael Dwyer, who is also running for that seat. And that will be one to watch as a very important matchup for the state legislature. Another major race that could end up being the most expensive race will be between incumbent state senator and chair of the Health and Human Services Committee, Merv Reapy. And Senator Reapy has done a good job representing his district and is a solid conservative senator, but his challenger is the guy who used to have his seat in the legislature and was term limited out and now wants back in, Omaha attorney and Democrat Steve Lathrop. So here you've got a former state senator challenging an incumbent who is a key office holder in the legislature for his old seat. That's going to be a hotly contested race, and I expect a lot of money to be spent in that race as well. And to add to this list, we got the surprising news just last week that Omaha Senator Joni Craighead of District 6 is not only not seeking re-election, but also stepping down from her seat in the state legislature. And that makes for a really interesting but also challenging scenario, because now you have a situation where the governor gets to appoint someone to fill that seat. But because it's coming up in this next election cycle, whoever that person is, who I'm sure will be well-qualified and the right person for the job, they will only have 1 year in the legislature before facing an election. So whoever the governor picks will seemingly have to start campaigning really since yesterday if they want more than 1 year in the legislature. And the Democrat challenger for that seat, who has already declared, Michaela Kavanaugh, is the daughter of former Democrat Congressman John Kavanaugh. And so she carries some name ID already in the district, and you can expect that race to be well-funded as well. So some very surprising news with Senator Craighead stepping down. She is a Republican and had been a strong advocate for traditional family values, very much a strong pro-life voice in the body that will be missed. So several key races to keep an eye on for the state legislature throughout this next year. And I'm sure some other interesting and competitive races will continue to develop. But adding to that list outside of the legislature is Democrat Jane Raybould, a business leader and city councilwoman from Lincoln, who is running against U.S. Senator Deb Fischer. Now, Jane Raybould is going to have a tough time challenging Senator Fischer, who has been a very popular U.S. senator and who I think has done an outstanding job for Nebraska families and representing the values that we care about. But really, I think Jane Raybould was about as formidable as a candidate as the Democrats could have hoped for. She already carried some name recognition. Her family actually founded Russ's Market, and she served on the city council in Lincoln. So I think that signals in at least their eyes and to their donors that they've got a candidate they'll be spending a lot of money on if she's going to have any real shot at all. And still no word yet on who the Democrats might run for governor to challenge Governor Ricketts and his reelection campaign, which I take as a good sign for Governor Ricketts, who also has been a pro-life champion, as well as defending traditional family values and the laws that he signs or chooses not to sign. But all of this just to say that even in a midterm election, these races really matter. Elections have consequences, and just as much as flipping one seat in the state legislature can make all the difference. Take, for example, just this year in the past legislative session, the state legislature came up just one vote short, one, of finally getting taxpayer dollars away from abortion providers and instead sent to real healthcare facilities and providers. And that provision to get the state of Nebraska out of the abortion business and protect your tax dollars failed by one vote. So it's essential that people know the candidates, know the issues, and go to the polls and vote for the values that they care about. And of course, Nebraska Family Alliance produces a nonpartisan, issue-based voter guide for every election cycle that will be available as we get closer to the midterms coming up in May. This past week, we also got a great reminder and message from Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse, who was speaking at a Rotary Club luncheon in Nebraska City, and he overheard a woman praying for elected officials. And when she asked a question at the end of his speech, he addressed her and what he heard her say. And in this video clip I'm going to play of Senator Sasse, you'll hear him talk about why those prayers matter, and also why politics and government isn't the most important thing in life, and as all-consuming as it can be, there are things that matter much more than simply politics, even to those directly working in politics as an elected official. So I'm going to play this short clip of Senator Ben Sasse addressing the Nebraska City Rotary Club earlier this month.
I think right as I was walking from the salad bar, you prayed for your federal officials and your states and locals. I would covet those prayers. We're parents, again, of little kids, and our hybridized commute it's not tough compared to lots of people's lives and jobs in the world, but it's still tough to be away from my kids or my wife and two of three kids, four of five nights out of every six or seven. And so our family is working real hard to figure out how do we use technology? How is dad present at the dinner table by Skype a lot more often, even when everybody's in Fremont, Nebraska, and I'm in DC for that night? But I wanna be a good dad. I wanna be a good neighbor. I wanna serve you all effectively. And I think that starts by having what I call a one cheer for politics view of the world. We know government's necessary in a broken world. we're sinners, and there are people who want to take your life and your liberty and your stuff, so government is necessary. But government isn't the meaning of the world. Government isn't the center of the world. The center of the world is Nebraska City, or Fremont, or North Bend, or Auburn, or Cozad. I'm trying to think where I'm headed next from here. The center of the world is places where people raise their kids, and where they worship, and where they're a member of the Rotary, and the Eagles, and the Kiwanis, and where they serve, and ultimately where they are neighbors, right? The government is necessary because the world is broken. We want to be free from all that brokenness so we can be free to live a life of gratitude to God by loving our neighbor and serving in the local community. This is supposed to be the center of the world. Every parent and every neighbor should believe the place where they're raising their kids is the center of the world. And I want to displace people from politics who think that politics are the meaning of the world. Washington, D.C. is not the meaning of the world. It's supposed to be a servant community that does a limited number of things and then gets the heck out of the way. And so I think this is an important calling to have for 6 years, but I don't want it to be a calling that displaces my neighborly and my spousal and my fatherly obligations. So I'd covet your prayer that we'd balance those callings well.
That was Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse with an important reminder for us all, and how great to have a federal representative with that understanding of politics, and that Washington, D.C. is in fact not the center of the world or even the center of the United States, and explaining the one cheer for politics view of the world, that there are other more important things like being a good spouse and a good parent and a good neighbor that really should be top priorities and make the most difference in our lives and our communities. And I think Senator Sasse articulated that very well. And it's an especially important message for us to keep in mind at a time when politics has been so dividing and so hostile, with seemingly every issue dividing the country. So pray for your elected leaders, because they need them and they appreciate them. I want to turn now to a discussion on what will be one of the most significant cases in our lifetime that will be before the United States Supreme Court later this year. And this case is the Masterpiece Cake Shop versus the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. And at the center of this is Christian cake artist Jack Phillips from Lakewood, Colorado, who declined to participate in a same-sex wedding ceremony and has now found himself on the losing end of this lawsuit and multiple court appearances, and his case has now gone all the way to the United States Supreme Court, and it really has been a miracle that the Supreme Court took this case. So Jack Phillips has lost in front of every commission and court he has appeared in front of, but will have a final opportunity to make his case in front of the highest court in the land. And this is a landmark free speech and religious freedom case. And just this week, attorneys from Alliance Defending Freedom who are representing Jack filed their opening brief with the U.S. Supreme Court, who will now ultimately decide whether the government can force him to create a custom wedding cake celebrating a same-sex ceremony in violation of his faith. And what is at stake here is essentially the First Amendment rights of not just Christians and not just bakers or florists or people involved in weddings, but every artist and every American, because this is really about whether or not people have the ability to not only run their business according to their beliefs, but do they have the right to not be forced to promote messages that they disagree with or participate in events that go against their beliefs. And so the brief that was just filed with the Supreme Court argues that the government, in fact, cannot coerce someone to create custom artistic expressions that violate their conscience. And this has been a long-standing constitutional principle. The government is not in the business of picking winners and losers, and certainly not picking a side on the most controversial issues and forcing everyone to agree with it or be punished. And a lot is at stake here, not just for believers and cake artists, but like I said, for everyone. A win for Jack at the Supreme Court would be a win for everyone, and a loss would be a monumental blow to religious freedom and free speech rights for all Americans, because basically what that would mean is the government can force you, they can force speech. They can force you to promote messages and participate in events that go against your beliefs. Tolerance is a two-way street, and the perfect example of this is multiple bakeries in California, multiple, refused or declined to bake a birthday cake that was a pro-Donald Trump cake. They didn't agree with President Trump's policies, or they don't like him personally, and they didn't want to create a cake portraying him in a positive light. And so they declined to create that cake. And that was their right to do so, and no one sued. But now Jack Phillips, because he declined to create a certain cake for a specific event, even though he will serve anyone who comes into his store, he now has lost 40% of his business and faces losing much more if the Supreme Court rules against him. And what is really disturbing about this case is that a government official actually compared Jack Phillips, the Christian baker who declined to make a cake for a same-sex wedding ceremony, to a Nazi, and likens his beliefs, which would be basically any Christian or conservative who believes in traditional marriage and a biblical view of human sexuality, to the Holocaust and slavery. And this comes from the Daily Signal reporting on Colorado Civil Rights Commissioner Diane Rice, who in 2014 said, when talking about Jack Phillips in his case, that freedom of religion and religion has been used to justify all kinds of discrimination throughout history, whether it be slavery, whether it be the Holocaust. I mean, we can list hundreds of situations where freedom of religion has been used to justify discrimination, and to me, it is one of the most despicable pieces of rhetoric that people can use to use their religion to hurt others. That is from a civil rights commissioner. And this is a clip of Jack Phillips reacting to being compared to a Nazi and the Holocaust, talking to Kelsey Harkness from the Daily Signal, getting Jack's reaction.
I don't have vocabulary for it, but for someone to compare trying to live by your faith to a person who brought on the Holocaust or to slave owners is just, it's insulting. It's ridiculous. I don't have the words for it, but it's wrong. Serve everybody. I just don't make cakes for every event. It's never the people. It's always the event that I look at it. Say, I can't do that.
And somehow this actually gets worse. Obviously, it's incredibly wrong and offensive that someone, especially a government official, would compare a Christian baker's religious beliefs to be the same as Nazis who orchestrated concentration camps and just committed unthinkable atrocities. It turns out that Jack Phillips' father was not only a World War II veteran, but actually was part of a group that helped liberate a concentration camp.
One of the commissioners on the Colorado Civil Rights Commission called religious freedom despicable rhetoric and compared not making a cake to slavery and the Holocaust. That was particularly offensive to me because my dad fought in World War II. He landed on Omaha Beach, Normandy. He fought across France. He fought across Germany. He ended up being part of a group that helped liberate Buchenwald concentration camp. And for her to compare not making a cake to the Holocaust, knowing what my dad went through, was just ludicrous and personally offensive.
Wow, it's just hard to imagine. This is someone who has sacrificed a lot in defense of religious freedom. And really, the first step in protecting these freedoms that we care about is passing good policy and stopping bad legislation. And that's why the Nebraska Family Alliance is working so hard every day with state legislatures and other elected officials at every level of government to ensure that Nebraska's public policies promote foundational principles NFA has been the leading voice and longest standing organization advocating for traditional family values at the state capitol, and your support helps protect your family's freedoms and the values we cherish. So to learn more about how you can partner with NFA and help defend our liberties and freedoms in Nebraska, you can visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. I'll be back next week. Thanks for listening to your Capitol Connection.